This week on the podcast, we talk about a couple things that are going away. NIV 84 and all the online translations, if you can't find it. And our constant companion and friend, Google Reader, is going to be no more effective July. All that and more coming up next. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast, a show where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two meet. We're on episode 280 for March 19th, 2013. And joining me as usual to talk about the this's and that's of technology and ministry, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you this morning. And always exciting times during the end of Lent. Looking forward to Holy Week here.
Yeah. And you've been running around all over Minnesota with a little math geek there.
Yeah, staying busy. We made it to state math counts this weekend, which was just a load of fun and blow your mind kind of math problems that I wouldn't want to tackle. But these sixth, seventh, and eighth graders just blow it away. And yeah, it was really exciting to watch. Comes down to a live countdown round. And I would guess there were probably 250 to 300 people there to watch, which is very intimidating for the kids. And and they sail right through these amazing math problems.
Cool.
It's a fun event.
Pass along my congratulations for all those things. Apparently science, math, technology genes run pretty deep in the Draper family.
Yeah, we're geeky around here, that's for sure, and very blessed, obviously. So.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Sally, we're going to talk about a topic today that is getting a lot of press, certainly within religious circles, and probably even more press within the Wells, and that is digital translations, and specifically, what are we going to do now that NIV 84 is basically out of print, so they're off the internet too. So there's some challenges related to that that we wanted to talk about. So we felt, let's have a show on digital translations, even though we talk off and on about that over the last year or two, because that's obviously something that all of our listeners use. But now it's come to a critical point where we need to make some decisions. So we thought we'd bring in the big guns this week, and we asked Pastor John Schrader from Sharpsburg, Georgia, at Faith Lutheran there, who happened to sit on the Translation Feasibility Study Committee. That's one of two committees that were initiated at Synod Convention two summers ago now, to talk about, and his group specifically was tasked with, could we write our own? And we took that opportunity to also talk with John about digital translations and what he uses in his day-to-day work as a pastor, technically savvy, pastor, and figure out maybe there's some things that we should be looking at that, maybe aren't on our radar or that have been in the past that now really need to be more a part of our mainstream workflow. So let's start our show with this interview with Pastor John Schrader. Happy to have joining us this afternoon, Pastor John Schrader from Sharpsburg, Georgia, at, is it Faith, John?
Faith Lutheran, yep.
Faith Lutheran, thanks for joining us. It's been a long time. You've been on the show before in early days. I forget, it was probably the first month or two of having the show, and a lot of time has passed since then, so it's about time that we had you back. Thanks for coming on. Maybe just to refresh our listeners' memories, and for those who don't know you, which is probably a small subset because you get around, tell us a little bit about yourself and your current ministry or ministries.
Yeah, I was called to Metro Atlanta Seminary as a church planter to start an exploratory church here. And so I've served in the same parish for the last 14 years now. God used us, gave us an opportunity to plant this church, and he has grown into a relatively large congregation now. And so we've got an awful lot of different ministries happening here at Faith, from the outreach ministries we've always taken a real passion for to early childhood ministry and just try to find a lot of unique ways to connect with the community and to share the gospel with them. So I've been serving that way at Faith for, like I said, for 14 years. I serve the Synod at large through on a couple of different places. I serve as the pastor at large representative on the Synodical Council. Yep. And as the moderator of a group called the Institute of Worship and Outreach, then serve in a couple other areas like the Schools of Outreach and Schools of Worship for the Synod.
Yep, very good. So we see quite a bit of you up here in Milwaukee, just so you don't forget about us up here. Hot topic, and one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you, obviously, is some of your work related to translations. That's obviously a hot topic in the Synod right now. Why do you think that's top of mind for a lot of people at this point?
Well, I think just because we are a church body that's very concerned about the truth and purity of the Word of God. So I think the passion that's there on regarding this topic is one that comes from the fact that we understand the treasure we have in the gospel, and we also understand the danger that comes from even letting one, the old version, one jot or tittle change in this word that Christ has given to us. And so I think that's a very hot topic, especially with the changes that the NIV was making from its last version of this one has brought the topic to the forefront. And I think I've really appreciated the passionate discussion on all sides, because it really does show that commitment to the word that we have across our ministerium and across the lay members of our congregation as well. So I think that the topic, while it's hot, is a good one, because it's going to be something that we're all going to learn about and learn what it means that we're working with translations and learn what it means to say, what's the difference between a translation and the original languages? And are there more than one way to express something from one language to another that's still faithful? And right. So I think that's a great topic.
Great. Way to bring KJV in there. That was a nice insert.
That was my homage to anybody that really wanted to go old school.
Awesome.
Well, we got the new NIV version sometime, I guess it's been over a year now that we've had it, but at the same time, we all still have our copies of the NIV 84, and we also were able to access them online with sites like Bible Gateway and YouVersion and that kind of thing. However, just within the last month or so, those digital online access have been taken down, and we don't have the digital versions at our disposal as easily. What kind of choices do Bible readers have now that the NIV 84 is no longer accessible that way?
I think that is a really important concept, that maybe the online portion of it is one that hasn't gotten a lot of conversation in our synodical discussions, because, I think our understanding of what Zondervan and Biblica were going to do with the NIV translation, our understanding progressed a little bit. At the beginning, everyone was worried that we wouldn't ever be able to publish anything with 1984 in it again, and of course that wasn't true. We can continue to publish using citations from the NIV 84, but the one thing that you're going to see a distinct and right away impact is going to be on those online versions. And I think as more and more readership of the Bible moves to the digital world, I think this is a great example that the versions that we're going to be working with are going to be inaccessible currently they are. I mean, you can own a 84 version that's digital yourself, but you're not going to be able to access it online in the same way. And that's really a result of Zondervan and Biblica wanting to move into this new translation and not have an orphan translation hanging out there. So really that for us as a congregation, that pushes this question a little faster than maybe we wanted to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
And I think we've overlooked, maybe not everybody, but I think a lot of us have overlooked the speed at which things are changing here. And even like the School at Peace in Hartford, where my wife teaches, they had to make a decision last year because, all the kids had to buy Bibles, for school. So what do you buy? You can't buy NIV 84. So they had to make a decision, regardless of what NPH was doing or what the Synod was doing or any of the committee work. And now with the electronic versions out there or not out there, that pushes it. It's become very inconvenient. It's not that you can't find it. It's still available in some, corners of the Internet, but the major players aren't having it. So it's a challenge, and a lot of church secretaries are struggling, to try and find where you do the cut and paste from.
Correct. Yeah, that we have solved that just by keeping our old files, and are able to go backwards for example, like pericope and stuff like that.
Right.
things. But yeah, that's an issue. And I think a lot of congregations are going to have to make that decision sooner rather than later, especially with things like buying Bibles for schools. And I mean, I think that was good for the Translation Evaluation Committee at the last Synod Convention to come out and say that their top three contenders, they felt they would be, you know, President Wendland, I think the line he had at Synod Convention was, you know, I would be happy to put any one of these three Bibles in the hands of my children, or maybe it was his grandchildren, he had said. Right. That was an important statement, I thought, because for a group like us that's so concerned about the pure word of God, it was just an important thing to hear that, okay, here's three choices that I would put in the hands of my kids or grandkids and say, this is God's word. Yeah. That at least allows us to make those congregational decisions with some level of comfort of saying, okay, the doctors of the church, as it were, have said they think these are faithful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead, Zoe. Maybe you could tell us a little bit, give us a little insight into your work on the Translation Feasibility Study Committee. We understand that you and a group of others got together and looked at the possibility of Wells having its own translation, and just wondering if that's going to happen or not.
Yeah, thank you. I'll give you a little advance preview of what our report will say. Our report will reflect, you know, really what was the reality is that we had I don't think we as a committee ever really came to consensus on the question of whether or not Wales should have its own translation. You know, there were people on both sides of the conversation. I think
that really wasn't the question, though, either, was it?
No, it was not.
It was a question of feasibility.
Was it feasible? Correct. Yeah. And that's really what we came back to is the question of feasibility comes down to, well, is it feasible for us to produce our own translation? Of course. I could go in my basement for the next year and a half and come out with a Bible, and it would be a translation. It'd be Wells, and I'd be relatively confident I could do it without putting any false doctrine in there. The real question would be, would anybody want to use it?
Right.
So it's not whether or not, of course we can do it. So the question we concentrated on wasn't, is it possible, but was it a project that we should be undertaking? And the reason that we really couldn't come to a great answer on that yet is because the Synod hasn't yet decided whether or not it can use one of the three translations being offered by the TEC. If the Synod in convention says we're perfectly happy with the ESV or the Holman or the new NIV, well, then I would say as a committee member that I think that the time, effort, energy, and resources it would take to produce our own translation would be unwise. That would not be a feasible project if we've got a translation everybody can coalesce around. But we didn't want to say that before, because what if the Synod comes back and says, no, none of these are acceptable to us? Well, then, of course it's feasible.
Right.
We will do something that, you know, we produce our own hymnal. We could produce our own Bible. But the reason we produce our own hymnals, we feel there's not another option that's out there that we could use.
Right.
And so are you going to see us saying that we should start a new Wells translation starting this summer? No, but we are going to say that certainly, you know, here's a scope or an outline of ways in which it could happen if we had to. But at the same point, our committee is really saying that the project of translating the Bible on our own would be a much bigger project than I think a lot of times it's envisioned. It's just a tremendously large undertaking. It'll be a tremendously expensive undertaking too.
Right. So switching gears a little bit, going back to digital translations and online Bibles and the like, a little peek behind John Schrader's workflow. What do you use for online Bibles and Bible study tools? Almost everything's digital, right?
Yeah, almost everything's digital. About the only part of my devotional work that is still not digital would be, I use the Treasury Daily Prayer from Concordia Publishing House, and I know they have a Kindle app for that, but I still have the big soft leather book. But I would say that for me, the digital tools that I use most frequently would be certainly the YouVersion. The YouVersion has a great app, allows you access to all sorts of whatever translation you want. Most of them, or a lot of them, are downloadable, so you don't need an internet connection to use them. With the exception, of course, of the NIV.
NIV, right.
The other thing I really love about that YouVersion is the the built-in audio files with it. So you know, if you've got your smartphone,
those readings, great.
Oh yeah,
that actor is awesome. Yeah,
yep. Turn on a book of Gospel of Matthew and listen to it. So I use YouVersion for a lot of personal devotion. Like as I was watching TV last night, I've got YouVersion open with my Bible because we were watching that new miniseries, the Bible miniseries, and so I have that would be my go-to app on an iPad or on my phone. As far as for just general quick searching and pulling stuff out for copying, I'd usually use Bible Gateway because there's so many different versions there, and it makes it very easy to pull the text out.
For
study, you know, sermon studies and most deeper study, I still use the New Logos for the Scholar's Edition that allows me to have all sorts of digital resources tied together. So that's really the go-to place. Although there's another one that is really kind of interesting that I've just started using, which is called the NET Bible, the NET Bible. Mm-hmm. And that has its website becomes a Bible study environment. And what's really cool about it is it doesn't just have the original languages, but it's got a set of translator notes, about 60,000 notes on the original languages that are really pretty good. I think for a lot of people that would be wanting to study Greek or Hebrew, that would be a set of notes that I would encourage people to take a look at because it's a great set.
Is that a free resource?
It's a free resource, yep.
Awesome, awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That's one we hadn't heard of, Martin. We also wanted to circle back to you mentioning the Bible mini-series. We know that out on your faith website, you have a page dedicated to the Bible mini-series and have put together some resources for people that are watching it to aid in discussion and review of it. And so we'd like to hear a little bit about that project, if possible.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary project to try to get involved with something produced out of Hollywood that you weren't able to see before it aired.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of dangerous. And we knew that going in. We also knew that a large number of our people were going to be watching it, whether or not we were going to be trying to make a connection on that. We just thought it'd be great to maybe take what may or may not be an accurate depiction of the Bible and use it to push our people into Bible reading of those accounts. And so if you take a look at some of those resources, and I'll give a shout out to my vicar, Evan Chartrand, who's doing a lot of work on this with me. If you take a look at that, one of the first things that we want people to look at is as you watch, you know, the account of Samson, what did you think was accurately portrayed? What didn't you? How did this portrayal of it, you know, broaden your understanding of the event and how do you think it was different from what you've always conceived of it in scripture? And so I've been doing it with my family and it's been a good thing for us as a family, sit down and watch that and at commercials, talk about what's accurate, what's not, have our Bibles open there. It's fun to hear your kids say, that's not the way it happened. So those are, it's been a fun thing. We're through week two. I'm just about to post the second week episode review this afternoon here today, and then we'll keep the Bible readings going forward. So we hope that a lot of people maybe can use that and drive them into some more study of these stories that they've heard very often, maybe haven't read in a while.
Cool. Very cool. And we kind of found this through a website called Bread for Beggars, which we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago. What's that site all about?
You know, Bread for Beggars was started by a former vicar of ours, Mark Parsons, who's pastor down in Port Charlotte, Florida. And he and a number of other people, I don't know everybody that's involved. I know another member of my church, Chris Eckhart's involved with them. And what they're really looking to do is try to be curators of quality material that's out on the internet that could be beneficial for people's devotional lives. And so really my biggest involvement with them is they've asked if they can use some of our materials as, you know, the curated content, whether that would be that we do sermon recordings every week and, sure. And put some of our posting stuff up there. And so we have an awful lot of people from our congregation that have been following them and found an awful lot of the stuff they're doing. I really enjoyed it.
Good. Yeah, it's well done. It's a nicely designed site, and I like their Facebook page, so I get their posts up there through that as well. So lots of good stuff to think about. John, appreciate your time, and I know you're busy. You've got a little cleanup there down in Atlanta to do in the sanctuary under a couple inches of water there. So we will keep you and your flock there in our prayers, and I'm sure the word will will be preached regardless of conditions.
Oh, we appreciate the chance to talk to you today.
Thank you, John, for the time that you took to share your thoughts on digital translations or translations in general. Sally, he mentioned a resource that we had maybe talked on and off about in the past, but not real prominently, and that's the Net Bible.
Yeah, I'm sharing my screen for those who are watching online. NetBible.com is a resource where you can actually see the original language notes next to the Bible reference. So if you go to the Read tab there on the site, then you'll see the Bible text there and then notes from the original language. And you can see, you can look at the Greek and Hebrew and see other resources that are available. You can do a side-by-side Bible in a lot of different ways. But I don't think they have the NIV 84 available.
Nope.
Their translations are ESV and NASB and a few others, the Message. But I think what Pastor Schrader was mainly referencing was the fact that they have you know, the Greek and Hebrew
good
notes
resources.
Available.
Yeah, they don't even have the NIV 2011 there. Mm-hmm. So it's a truly a different translation. But I like what they've done there with the side-by-side and, the parallel scrolling and highlighting. It's they've done a really nice job with basically an online Bible. So it's something worth taking a look at. And it sounds like John has found some usefulness out of it. So good deal.
We'll also have links in the show notes to the entire area of the Wells.net website dedicated to the work of translation studies that's gone on over the last several years for the Synod. I know this will be a big topic at Synod Convention. Mm-hmm. You can read official reports and the translation feasibility study reports. There's Bible study resources available here. There's all kinds of great content available here as you decide which Bible translation you want to make use of for personal Bible study.
Cool. Yeah, be sure to check that out. I think the translation committee and the people involved with picking a translation have recognized that this is a big deal and that resources just around, this is a good opportunity to study the study of translations and provide resources about how we pick a Bible and, what are the key things to look at. So something that we should all probably pay attention to.
We did a lot of that here in our congregation because we were involved. My husband was involved in studying the three translations as one of the 102 that did a report. And it was really great for our congregation to look at the three that were being studied side by side and to understand a little bit more about the nuances of language translation. It gets pretty technical.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. So what's the big deal, Sally, about changing translations, at least in a digital way? I think there are probably some challenges that represents.
Right. I think the one that kind of reared its head on the Wells Tech listserv recently was, mm-hmm. what's my church secretary going to do for getting the readings into the Sunday bulletin? So we were all pretty accustomed to Bible Gateway or maybe YouVersion being there with the NIV 84 version.
Right.
And you could look up the Sunday readings and drag across the screen to copy it and paste it into your worship folders. And that's not the case anymore. I think it was about the end of February that they pulled those versions, and you can no longer get them easily in a digital format for that kind of thing.
Right.
We also had an email, Martin, you had an email from missionary Brad Wardell asking mm-hmm. questions about what do I go forward with? You know, what's the best way? What do I invest in my time and my notes and all those kind of things?
There's a lot of printed and digital resources that we're very used to using. And he mentioned in his email, the Concordia Self-Study Bible, which is an awesome resource put out by Concordia, of course, using the NIV 84 version and the notes that go along with that. Just a great resource. And obviously that's no longer available. So lots of choices still out there, but it's going to be something that you want to, kind of think through and see what works best for you. There are still places, of course, where you can find NIV 84. We found one online resource, I believe. And that may even be gone now. I don't know.
No, I just looked it up. It's BibleStudyTools.com.
Okay.
And our test verse was Genesis 1:26, whether it says man or mankind. Mm-hmm. And it still says man, even though it just says New International Version. This is actually the NIV 84 that is available on this BibleStudyTools.com, at least for now.
Yeah, and it's probably those sites that probably aren't on the ball as much, maybe, and they just haven't gotten around to replacing it. So it's, I would think in the very near future, it will be impossible to find it online. But if you have some of these tools already, for instance, Logos or the Glow Bible, or obviously any downloaded Bible that you have, you're not going to lose that's still going to be accessible to you. That doesn't solve maybe the secretary's problem, but you still, as a student of the word or somebody who maybe needs to do some cutting and pasting, you can still grab that stuff in local copies, of course. So just kind of treat those carefully if you want to continue to use NIV 84, because it's that or you type it out by hand. You still have the paper version.
Or, as Pastor Schrader said in the interview we just played, they are actually using their old bulletins. So they have an archive of saved bulletins or worship folders from 3 years ago that they're able to look back to and, copy and paste the text because of the 3-year pericope cycle. So that's an option. If you still have that saved somewhere, you might want to dig those up.
Yep. But again, the options are getting slimmer and slimmer. So if you're looking for, at some point you have to make a decision, regardless. So it's a matter of, pick your translation. It really doesn't matter which translation you pick as far as the online availability of it, because all the tools that we've talked about in the past, YouVersion, Logos, Glow, all of them are going to have the major versions as well. So it's not a matter of you're going to be stuck there, but you're going to have to make a decision. And in fact, our school had to make a decision. Our Peace Lutheran grade school had to make a decision last year because the kids are, when they enter a confirmation class, they're required to buy a Bible, and you couldn't buy NIV 84 anymore. So they had to make a decision about which physical Bible to purchase. So.
Sure. So basically, all those translation studies, they focused on three Bible translations, the ESV, the Holman Christian Standard, and the NIV 11. Mm-hmm. And from what I read and what I understand, there are pluses and minuses to all three. And you're just going to have to evaluate for yourself, which you want to use. And maybe we should clear up that Synod and Convention isn't really deciding what Bible the churches should use. It's deciding what Bible NPH should use for things like Christlight in the future. What Bible do we want our students memorizing from? That kind of thing. There's no dictate from Synod as to what Bible congregations or individuals use. Never has been. It's just we kind of standardized on NIV 84 because that's what we understood to be the best, and that's what MPH was using in their publishing.
Sure. And of the three, I mean, they all come at it from the three that we're studying, all come at it from a little bit different angle. The ESV is what the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has chosen for their publishing, for what Concordia uses in their Bibles and such. And that's a more literal translation, probably a little stiffer than NIV. NIV 2011 is obviously just a revision of the NIV 84. They've got some gender inclusive language and those kinds of things. So it's probably middle of the road as far as walking the line between literal translation and more readability. And then the Holman Bible is even more readable and probably less literal than NIV. So you've got both ends of the spectrum and in the middle. But as you said, Sally, there are many choices out there.
One more thing to mention, we have a great series on Wells.net called Through My Bible, and it reads through the entire Bible in sections in 3-year time slot. And so we aren't switching to any different version as of now. We're going to keep with the NIV 84. So those readings will continue to be available. And the digital format of those, we have that saved and we're able to share that or continue to share that. But you can only get to about 2 weeks at a time. You can't get to the whole Bible because that would break our copyright. And so if you want to follow along and if those readings are helpful to you, they're in the book of Jeremiah right now. So
yeah. So over 3 years, you can get the whole NIV 84. It's just going to take 3 years to do it. Yes. And that's both in, as you mentioned, text and audio format.
So, patience.
Yeah. Yeah. At some point, we probably will have to make some decisions around that as well. So. All right. So that concludes our discussion on digital Bibles. I'm going to return to that topic in my pick of the week. But for now, let's move on to ministry resources.
And I'm excited to share, and my mind map just crashed. Martin, maybe you can bring up Sunday Solutions on your screen. So it's one tab I didn't open, unfortunately.
Hang in. But, yes, we can do that.
Our friend Jeff Hendricks, who's a seminary student at Bethany ELS Seminary, shared a link to My Sunday Solutions. This is a new product from Concordia Publishing House. And basically it's music, printable music that you can subscribe to. And Martin just typed in A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. You can see that they have offerings for organ, for voices, for handbells, for lots of different instruments and things like that. And depending on which hymn you type in, you can get access to these printable resources that you can use in your congregation to enhance the music. It's a subscription-based model. You can get access to everything for $275 per year, or you can pick the prices, pick and choose the different types of things you're interested in. So like if you're just interested in descants to supplement the normal hymn singing, or if you're interested in handbell music, you can subscribe to that only. And the prices range from $49 to $79, depending on which you're interested in. I think there's a page on the website where you can see all the different music that's offered for the different categories. So you can get a feel for how much is available in terms of organ music or handbell music or whatever it is. I think they've done a really great job with this. Looks like a dream come true for the musicians in our congregations. Right. And, you know, it does come at a price, but I think if you're looking for handbell music to go along with hymns, favorite hymns, there's definitely a large selection there. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping that with the new hymnal project, and we talked to Mike Schultz, you know, a number of episodes ago about the new hymnal project, which is in very early stages, that I'm sure they're thinking about stuff like this for the music that we have at MPH and obviously the new hymnal. So look forward to more
awesome.
Good stuff. And I know they're thinking mobile apps and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, we're looking forward to keeping up with that project.
Yep. Thanks, Jeff, for sharing that link.
Yeah. What's next, Sally? I know I got to find my mind map.
I think I've got a pick to share.
News and tech.
Oh, I skipped.
You can't forget this story.
Sorry, I'm way ahead of
the game. This is the story of the century.
Yeah. I don't know what Google's thinking, but apparently last week somebody was in a bad mood and they decided to cancel Google Reader. Hello, that's like part of my brain that's going to go away. Mm-hmm. Google Reader, for those of you that don't use it, is an RSS reader, and it's very versatile. You can easily add new blogs and websites that you want to follow. You can categorize them. It comes in to different software. It works on mobile device. It's just a wonderful tool. And now it's going away, and it's going away pretty soon, like the end of July, maybe something like that.
I mean, it's an essential. We've talked about personal learning networks before. It's really an essential part of that, as opposed to going to every website and seeing if something's new. This brings it all together, you know, in one easy format. You can categorize, you can tag, you can share. And I used it every day, and it was a big part of, you know, how we put together this show. Yeah. So.
So, no excuses, but if the show goes downhill, it's Google's fault.
That's right. There are alternatives, though, so all is not lost. Feedly is the one that I'm now using. So I actually, you know, switched already, and, you know, boy, they were getting pounded yesterday. They had about 500,000 new users just yesterday, and the site was up and down all day. It's a little bit more graphically rich, I think a little bit slower So not quite as functional, I guess, but it does the same kind of thing. You can do some shares and those kinds of things. And there are just a ton of articles out there now about, you know, Google Reader alternatives as well, which we'll share in the notes. And Tom Rosenow shared some of those with us as well. And even some kind of MacGyver hacks that you can get. You can get some of your news through a tool called IFTT, If Then Then That, and tools like Pocket or Evernote or even Gmail to kind of tag those things and get them into your workflow somehow.
Lots of options there. So, yeah. And Google has a tool. I don't have it in the mind map, Martin, but I'll have a link in the show notes to Google Takeout,
yeah,
where you can basically download your list of feeds so that you can import it somewhere else easily.
Yeah, it comes out in OPML format, which is basically just an HTML file. And most readers like Feedly or some of the other ones that are trying to take Google Reader's place now accept those feeds, and you can easily it's not the end of the world, because it's actually not the content that you're trying to save. It's just the feeds themselves. So I don't know how many feeds you have, Sally, but I have about 80 or 85 feeds. So maybe you got more than I do.
I think I do. I hadn't counted, but I have a lot, a lot invested there. So, gee, the moral of the story is don't count on any of these free tools sticking around. I guess any of the fee ones either, but you know.
You need a backup plan. So.
Yeah.
All right. Picks of the week. I think we should do that next.
Finally, I get to share my screen again and show you the artofproblemsolving.com. This is a math-oriented site. I had to stop and think, what is my pick of the week? Well, this is one of the sites that got us through and to state math competitions. So if you're a math teacher, if you have interest in math, I think you'll find this website to be a really cool place to visit. Art of Problem Solving is done by a guy named Richard Russick. And the reason I discovered it is because over on the official Math Counts website, there's a video series called Math Counts Minis. And he's been doing this for probably 4 years or so, where each month of the school year, he puts out maybe a 10-minute video or so explaining some of these blow-your-mind kind of math problems. And he just does an awesome job. He kind of reminds me of Steve from Blue's Clues. He's kind of fun and silly. He uses a board behind him. He does a great job. If you are a math fan, no matter what your age, you would enjoy these Math Count Minis. Well, that, again, like I said, led me to his website, and I'm sure it's not just him alone that does the Art of Problem Solving, but he's a big voice on this website. And they do, they have some really excellent books, something called The Art of Problem Solving, and I've actually ordered books from them for the about the Art of Problem Solving, which is really great for preparing for math contests, maybe at the Math Counts junior high kind of level, but also at high school level. They have online classes that you can take, and they're accredited. They also have something called For the Win, which is a head-to-head live online math competition. So you can be involved in competing in similar circumstances as to the Math Counts or High School Math League. And then they also have video resources. And these cover pre-algebra, algebra, counting and probability, as well as the Math Count Minis that are posted here, and videos for the American Math Challenge competition, which is the high school level. And there's all kinds of videos where he's working through these amazing math problems. So if you're looking to beef up math skills or take it to the next level, if you coach a high school math team, I think the Art of Problem Solving is a friend to you, and I invite you to enjoy it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing cool stuff. And they don't even charge for this stuff.
Nope. They have an online community. The books are worth the money. They get money from the books. They also get money from their online classes. And I'm sure there's a lot of homeschoolers that are looking for this level of mathematics classes. So they have everything.
Yeah, perfect for that. Yeah, absolutely.
And they have computer science courses as well. Some Java stuff. They have specific contest preparation classes. So if you're in Math Counts or the high school math leagues or whatever, you can get involved in some of their courses for that as well. So
cool.
Good stuff.
Very good. Sally, my pick is related to our topic of the day, and that's digital Bibles. And I think this has actually been a pick in the past, and we've interviewed the founder of the Glow Bible. It comes to my mind as a worthy pick, not just because we're talking about digital translations, but because I use this pretty extensively in a Bible class I taught the last four Sundays at our church. I was teaching a series on a rather obscure passage from Kings, and it had to do with the building of Solomon's temple. And when I had the opportunity to do this, I thought, boy, this is a great chance to show off some of the cool tools that are in the Glow Bible. So in the Glow Bible, you don't just have the translations, of course, and you've got NIV and New King James and a few others. But you have all kinds of media resources. You have maps, timelines, you have artwork. Basically, it gives you a fuller, more enhanced tool set when you're teaching anything about the Bible. So I was able to pull up a virtual tour of Solomon's temple, artwork of the cedars, them cutting down the cedars of Lebanon, maps, how far they had to transport that wood from Tyre and Lebanon all the way down to Jerusalem. Just kind of a unique thing. And what I also did with Glow, and it's available on PC, Mac, or on Apple products, iPad or iPhone. I think it's coming to Android pretty soon. But I did my entire Bible class on the iPad. So I did a keynote, which you can get on the iPad, and the Glow Bible. So all of the tools that the Glow Bible does not have. Let's see, I'm trying to think which lens it doesn't have on the iPad. I think it's the timeline lens, but it has maps. It has the translations, of course. It has the media. Very, very slick product that really enhances a Bible class. So if you're not aware of the Glow Bible, give it a try. You can try out the free version, which gives you a lot of stuff, so you really get a sense for what it can do. And then if you want to get all of the stuff, it's only like $35, so it's a very inexpensive proposition. It's all downloadable. You do have to have a pretty powerful computer. I wouldn't say over the top, but you need something that can run graphics, and because it'll chug along if you've got an underpowered computer. So Glow Bible is my pick, and just something that I really rediscovered teaching a series. It's a really valuable teacher resource. And I can envision any kind of teacher who does Bible history, confirmation class, anything like that, at whatever grade level, this would be a great tool to bring into the classroom.
Very good. Thanks for sharing that and inspiring us to use Glow.
All right. Let's move on to community feedback.
We're going to start with feedback from Twitter this week, Martin. Twitter was a buzz, starting with the fact that I normally tweet about our podcast each week, and last week I did that, specifically about the fact that we were doing presentations in our book that we talked about last week. And exciting for us, Gar Reynolds, who is the author of Presentations In, retweeted what I had to say in a link to our Wells Tech podcast. So if you're listening to Wells Tech for the first or second time because Gar sent you here, we are happy
Welcome.
To have you join us. Yeah, he's got like 20 or 30,000 followers on Twitter. So way to get the word out about Wells Tech.
Thank you, Gar, for doing that. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, definitely. Also on Twitter, there's been a lot of buzz around the Pound Wells Ed chat. And what that means is you can agree with a group of people to show up at the same time on Twitter and have a conversation using a particular hashtag. So each of your tweets has that hashtag, and you follow the compilation of all those tweets and are able to basically have an online chat with a group of people around a topic. And our friend Rachel Pearson suggested that we have a Wells Ed chat for Wells teachers. So the time and date have been established. It's going to be this Thursday, March 21st, from 8 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And if you are on Twitter and want to participate, just mark your tweets with the Pound Wells Ed hashtag, and you'll be able to be part of the conversation.
Cool.
I did see a tweet from Rachel. She was looking for questions and things to kind of start the ball rolling. And so if you have any questions you'd like discussed during the chat, you can tweet Rachel with those, and she'll make sure to bring them up.
Very cool. And you're thanks, Rachel, there? For doing that. Yeah, I'm going to try to.
Yeah.
It's on my calendar.
I'm bummed with our blizzard conditions yesterday. We were supposed to have speech night last night. Now it's going to be Thursday night.
Oh, bummer.
So I just found out I can't be a part of it, unfortunately. But mom duties trump that. So.
I think you got mobile technology that you can use there. So
yeah, I don't have a smartphone with a 4G connection. I can't do that.
No Wi-Fi there.
No Wi-Fi there. Bummer. Not at least they don't let you get on the MVL Wi-Fi. It's
really
secured. Yeah. So
okay.
I'm shut down.
All right.
Anyway, there was one more tweet. It was from my friend Martin Spriggs. Martin, you had a Twitter article there. You want me to come back to you on that?
No. I got it right here. No,
okay.
No worries. It is called, actually, it came through, I don't know, this probably came through Google Reader.
Oh, what a lovely place.
Yeah, exactly. It's an article and a blog post called Teaching, Writing, and Learning with Graphic Organizers. And this is dear to my heart for a couple of reasons, because my wife is involved in teaching, writing, and literature. And I love graphic organizers. In fact, graphic organizers like Mind Map or Mind Manager are things we use to make this show happen. But it talks a little bit about the concept of mind mapping or graphic organizers. They have different names, I guess. But they give all kinds of useful use cases for it, how a teacher might use it. So they've got a section here, how can graphic organizers help educators teach? How can graphic organizers help students learn? What are the best graphic organization tools? And, you know, just a nice list and actually well thought out. This is not just somebody that sat down and wrote a blog post in 10 minutes. They really gave this some thought. And I think anybody who is interested in kind of the visual learning side of things, this is a great blog post to read. So we'll have a link to it in the show notes.
Awesome. All right, moving on, we had quite a few links shared via Digo, and I'll probably go through these kind of quick. There'll be links in the show notes as well. But starting with some that I shared, I read an article this week from TechSmith, and they have an iPad app. So this is iPad-centric, or for those with iPad classrooms. It's called Ask 3, and I think the app maybe has been out for a little while. It's the ability to share videos in a classroom setting. So when you sign up, you actually get a classroom code that you share with your students. So these are very set apart just for your classroom. Mm-hmm. But the exciting thing that this article brought out is that it kind of levels the playing field for those that don't have internet access at home, because Ask 3 videos automatically download to the iPad.
Oh, okay.
And so the students can watch them offline. And that's a pretty big deal. I think, you know, we talk about the digital divide a lot, and the fact that this particular app allows the students to still have access to whatever videos you're creating and sharing. It also allows the students to make videos. It has kind of a whiteboard feel to it, so you can draw things out and narrate as you go, and they can share with each other. But when they launch the app, those videos are automatically downloaded for them. So I think that's a cool twist.
Yeah, that kind of plays into the whole flipped classroom concept, mm-hmm. too, where you can take these things, you know, out of the classroom and use them.
Absolutely. A couple of more that I tagged. One is called Leap Motion. Apparently, this got a little press at South by Southwest last week.
Yep.
It's a plug-in for a USB port that allows you to communicate with your computer using motion. So your hand can make things happen on your computer.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll have to follow it, see how it goes. But yes. New technology, always fun. And then also tag this one, Martin. I was thinking of you. Have you heard of SaneBox.com?
I have. I've not used it, though. But yeah.
People say it's really great if you have an insane web email box, that it'll clean it up and bring the important things to the front. Works with lots of different email clients. So Maybe that's one to add to your productivity list.
Okay.
Next up from Tom Rosenau, principal out in Pigeon, Michigan at St. John's. He shared several links. I think he's a big Lifehacker fan. I bet he reads Lifehacker in his Google Reader. But anyway, this one is Sound Drown, and it plays kind of background noise, white noise, rain, coffee shop kind of noise. And Tom's note was interesting on this one. He said, has anyone ever used something like this in the classroom? I have students that greatly enjoy having some music playing in the background. He limits it to classical piano mostly. Anyone know of a study that demonstrates if this helps students learn?
Or good calms question. Them down.
Yeah. The quieter atmosphere.
Yeah.
There's another link from Lifehacker that Tom shared, how to boot into Linux from your Android phone.
Mm-hmm. That's so geeky. Yes.
If you're geeky enough, yep, here's something you can do to your Android phone. And then finally from Tom, a link, how to 4 useful Automator workflows for OS 10. So apparently he's not a Mac user, but he thought
he's all
Mac
over the board
users.
Here. He's got Linux, Android, Mac. Yep. Holy
yep.
cow.
It's that Google Reader working
yes.
for him. So
that's right.
All right. From Jason Schmidt, he shared a link to Cleaner. And I think we've talked about Cleaner before
yeah.
on the podcast, CLEA.NR. And it's for a cleaner internet. So it now works with iPhone, iPod, and iPad apps to change the view, to take away all the advertising, all the superfluous stuff that's around, getting rid of the clutter.
Yeah, I think so, Gail has mentioned this before
yeah.
or something like it. Mm-hmm.
I just was excited to hear that it works with the iOS as well.
Cool.
Couple of links from our friend Ryan Rosenthal. Ryan is from Faith in Fond du Lac. And the first one is a Google Doc spreadsheet, Chrome app and extension must-haves, where it's collaboratively built, apparently.
It's got Feedly right at the top there.
Right. And so, yeah, check this out if you're looking for Chrome extensions to do the work for you. And then he also linked to Digital Posters, a virtual library. And he had a comment, and apparently my mind map's going to crash on me again. But I think these are World War II posters, and they're like original source things and look like a really cool collection.
Well, his comment was, cool World War II resource, primary source posters.
There you go. Thanks for that. And then finally, just this morning, I picked up a link from Pastor Steve Daly, and he's tweeted or shared that Google Keep is live, or maybe it's not. They took it away. But Google Keep, apparently, since they're getting rid of Reader, they can introduce new things.
Yeah.
And this is going to be kind of their...
Yeah, good luck with that hanging around, too.
Right. Their version of Evernote.
Yeah.
And he's excited about it. He already uses Google Apps and would like mm-hmm. to have his notes integrated with his Google Apps. And he is a Scratchpad user currently. He says that's Chrome extension.
Yep. He's a Linux guy, so
definitely.
That's not surprising.
So, yeah, I guess this will be the next news we hear from Google officially, something called Google Keep. I'd rather them keep Reader and not worry about Google Keep, but oh well. Don't get to vote in that, apparently.
Did you sign the petition?
I didn't. There's a petition, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forget what the URL is, but there was an online petition. It's not going to do any good, but I signed it, and, you know, it's the first one of those I've done, but there was, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people that signed the thing. But
yeah.
Google seems pretty stubborn on this one.
I think their reason was that it's
declining
yeah. popularity.
It's probably only geeks like us that use it. That's not it's not mainstream. So I don't
okay.
know. Well, probably all the readers or all the listeners on this show use it too. But
yeah.
We are the 1% maybe.
Okay.
Next week,
do it.
Next week is our focus on classroom technology, right, Sally? We're going to have Jason Schmidt with us.
Yep. Looking forward to having a good conversation with Jason about where to find video resources for your classroom. Last month, we talked about flip classrooms, and that's a lot of focus on creating your own content. But this is going to dive a little deeper into sites like Learn360 and YouTube Education Channel and things like that.
So tune in next week if you have any interest in that. Let's close the show. The music of Don Michelle Williams, Where I Belong. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.